Welcome to the Pathways Podcast for the American Society for Cell Biology. I'm Mary Spiro, your host, and today I'm speaking with our meetings team, and we're going to be talking a little bit about some of the new initiatives to increase diversity, equity, and inclusion at the annual meeting. We have Allison Harris, the Director of Meetings, and Daniel Rayford, our meetings manager. Thanks for joining me today, ladies. So let's start with just sort of a general overview of the meeting, the CellBio Virtual 2021. We're virtual again. And who is our keynote speaker?
Our keynote speaker is Xiaowei Zhuang. She's an HHMI investigator at Harvard University, and she's a pioneer of super resolution fluorescence microscopy. So we're really excited to be showcasing her work as our keynote speaker at the meeting this year.
Excellent. And we also have so many, we have the main symposia, we have special interest subgroups, we have many symposia, workshops, panels. Anything else that you'd like to highlight there?
This year, so far, our program is quite diverse. We have a lot of diverse researchers and research that's going to be presented at the meeting. And in addition to the sessions that you mentioned, we also have a lot of education and professional development sessions that are going to be really exciting. Those will be on December 1st through 3rd before the scientific portion of the program.
Well, that's right. So the meeting actually, so the meeting starts on December 1st and goes all the way until what, the 10th?
The 10th, that's correct, yeah.
Right. So the first few days are education and professional development. And then when do the science sessions and posters and all that start?
Yeah, we give everybody a break over the weekend, and then we get going with all the science beginning on December 6th, which is Monday, and that runs through Friday, December 10th.
Okay.
And both the posters and all of the scientific talk sessions will be during that single week.
Okay. And people can start looking at posters though right away though from the 1st of December, correct?
Yes. The posters will be uploaded. We'll be asking all the poster presenters to upload their work by December 1st.
Okay. So all the posters will be available by December 1st in all sections, right? Everything. And then I wanted to ask you too about the poster sessions. You're doing those a little bit differently. Those have been reimagined.
Yes. So based off of feedback from last year, we decided to go a different route with our posters this year. And while everybody will still have the opportunity to upload a 3 to 5 minute overview of their poster that they can upload with the PDF, during designated time slots each day, there'll be a 30-minute designated time slot each day, December 6th through 10th, that people can toggle themselves available or not available. And if they are available, people can hop into a Zoom room, just a personal Zoom room, just for that single poster presenter, and have a conversation, and up to 9 people can join them at any of those 30-minute time slots. So we're giving people lots of opportunities. We're trying to accommodate different time zones as well for people's availability, and they're welcome to participate in as many of those as they would like.
Yeah, that is a definite shift from last year. Last year, we had groups of poster presenters together. And in this case, we're just having, you have an opportunity to just focus on your poster and invite people to talk with people about your poster individually. I think that's very nice. Makes it a little bit more personal and more intimate. And also you can invite people specifically to see your poster in that talk session.
That's correct. And also there will still be a comment box underneath the poster. So if somebody does come to visit your poster and you happen to not be available at the time, they can still leave you a public comment. They can also contact you directly through the platform to set up a different time to meet and talk. So lots of options for our poster presenters to connect with the attendees.
Yeah, because I know sometimes that poster session can be very difficult and awkward in the online setting. But so I think that, you know, we have so many opportunities for speaking at the annual meeting. And aside from the program that was developed by, now who are the program chairs again this year?
Program chairs this year are Denise Montel and Daniel Gerlich, and they worked really hard with their program committee to put together a diverse slate of speakers for the symposia sessions. And as you mentioned, there are a lot of opportunities for people to give talks beyond the predetermined symposia topics and speakers. Between the special interest subgroups and the mini symposia, we will have approximately 400 talks that will be selected from abstracts. And most of these talks are actually presented by graduate students and postdocs. So it's a wonderful opportunity to put their research out on a large stage.
So what are some things that you've done differently this year to increase the diversity among these additional speakers, and aside from the main symposia, the mini symposia and the special interest subgroups, what have you done to increase the diversity among that group of speakers who are primarily, as you say, graduate students and postdocs?
Sure. I'll speak on the mini symposia and Danielle can give you guys an update on how the subgroups are going to work. But so last year in the 2020 meeting, was the first year that we introduced scoring of the abstracts. So it was the first time that the mini symposia co-chairs actually received abstracts and had to score those abstracts. Three co-chairs would score each abstract randomly assigned, and only the top scoring abstracts could be considered for a talk. And this year, what we've done to try to make it a little bit more equitable is we have concealed that scoring process. So the mini symposia co-chairs no longer can see the author information for the abstracts. All they see is a title, the body of the abstract, and the topic for which they're submitting. So it gives it makes it a little bit more equitable during that process. And another thing we're doing is for those who designated and themselves as an underrepresented minority in science during the submission process, any of the people that are underrepresented minorities in science will, as long as they score above the median weighted average score, they will also be included in the top scoring abstracts, even if they're not essentially in the top scoring percentage, because we realize there are, you know, some structural things in place that could create bias.
The people who are looking at these, evaluating these abstracts, they cannot see what institution, what are the name of the author. They can only see the title and the abstract content.
That is correct. Yes.
Okay. And then people can identify as an underrepresented a person from an underrepresented group or not.
Yes, they have the option to do that. And if they do identify as that, the co-chairs at the point of scoring don't see any of that. They will not see that information until after the scores are all in place and we have our top scoring abstracts. But we will be including anybody who scores above the median score in any track, scientific track, in the top scoring abstracts for the co-chairs to be able to select for talks. So it'll get their research out there, put them up at the top of the list.
And what is the goal of this? This is to sort of break up sort of ruts that people have gotten in and choosing maybe favoring certain labs or certain schools. What is this supposed
to do? So it's kind of a lot of people, and it's not intentional, but a lot of people stick with the inner circles and the circles they know. They see familiar names, they see familiar institutions, and there's some bias there that tends to affect scoring sometimes when that happens. And so we're trying to just even the playing field and allow the research to speak for itself. And that's what they're scoring it on. And it kind of can eliminate any implicit bias that may be there that's unintentional.
Daniel, what did you want to add to this?
For the special interest subgroups, they work a little bit differently than the mini symposia in that they're member organized sessions. So members apply to run these sessions. They sort of have free rein to do whatever, to create the session that they want, including inviting their own speakers. And they have the option, or they have the ability to select from the abstract submission pool to identify other possible speakers who have similar interests in the type of session that they're trying to create. In order for us to sort of align these type of sessions with the mission and goals of ASCB in terms of what we're trying to do for diversity and equity and inclusion, we've incorporated a couple steps that are sort of the reverse from what Allison was saying. So at the application level, when a person is submitting to host a session, we have encouraged them to identify and invite a diverse slate of speakers. So from the beginning, they're aware that this is what they need to be, thinking about when they're coming up with names. And when we talk about diversity, we mean race and ethnicity, gender, career level, institution, and geographic location. So we want like a well-rounded balance within the session. After abstracts have been submitted, we've gone through that process, and now the organizers are, going through their process of putting together their sessions. We provide them with a list of all of the abstracts that have been submitted to their session to be considered to speak within their session, and we include those demographics. That way they can visually see how, what the composition is of that session. And as they're doing that, we will be monitoring that composition and letting them know prior to the sessions being finalized that, you know, they should reevaluate and make changes if necessary. So we're really hoping that adding these little changes to the speaker selection process with the subgroups will help offer a more diverse lineup within that programming.
So Allison, with regard to the mini SIMPs, how many different speaker slots are we talking about?
So there are 28 mini symposia sessions, and it varies. The number of sessions under each scientific track varies by the popularity of the track. We have as many as 10 mini symposia sessions under, for example, the cellular dynamics track, because that is our most popular track. And we have as few as 2 sessions under some of the other tracks that are not as popular amongst our attendees. There are 6 talks in each session. So we're looking at 168 total talks in the mini symposia sessions themselves.
Okay. What percentage of speakers who identify as underrepresented minorities would make this a success in terms of how you've changed the process for choosing these speakers?
That's a wonderful question. In February, our council met and they set aspirational numbers for speakers, diverse speakers at the meeting. And they set them based on the US population, which as many of us know, is not the same percentages of underrepresented minorities in science. So those aspirational goals set the bar very high. And unfortunately, we are limited by the abstracts that we actually receive. And for the first abstract deadline, which was on August 3rd, we only had 9% of those abstracts that were submitted by underrepresented communities. So we are a bit limited by that, but we do want to ensure that those abstracts are put in front of the mini symposia co-chairs and reviewed based on merit. And because we truly believe that the people that are submitting the abstracts in underrepresented communities are doing amazing research, and a lot of times they're overlooked. And so we want to make sure that they're being included in the program. It doesn't mean that 100% of those that submitted that are underrepresented will be selected, but the top scoring abstracts we're hoping will all be slotted into speaking, into sessions, giving talks.
And then for the special interest subgroups, Danielle, what is a percentage that would be successful for you?
So based on the percent that was actually submitted to give a talk within the subgroups was about 9%. So having a representation that's equivalent to that, I think would be exciting to see.
We will return to the Pathways podcast after these brief announcements. Here's what's happening this month with the American Society for Cell Biology. Cell Bio Virtual 2021 will be here before you know it. Save some money and register by September 30th. Fees increase on October 1st. Also make sure to submit your abstract for poster presentation. The final abstract submission deadline is October 12th. If you're planning to attend Cell Bio Virtual 2021 but need help with registration or abstract fees or even childcare expenses, go to ASCB.org/cellbio and scroll down until you see the section on meeting grants. There you can apply for attendance and or childcare grants. We want to make your experience at Cell Bio Virtual 2021 as smooth as possible. It's free money, you might as well apply. Webinars return this month after the summer hiatus. Make sure to visit the Meetings and Events tab on the ASCB website and drop down to see the new webinars listed there. All webinars are free to listen to live, but you have to be a member of ASCB to listen to some of them on replay. Register for an ASCB webinar today. Okay, that's it for this month. Now back to the show. What are some other things that ASCB is doing at the annual meeting to increase diversity, equity, and inclusion across the board, regardless of what, you know, we're not talking about speakers now, like other things that you might be doing to improve that?
Sure. So it's a little bit difficult in a virtual setting to create networking sessions and things like that. However, for our 2022 meeting, we actually are introducing inclusion buddies who are working hand in hand with our program committee to help broaden their thinking when they're coming up with topics and speakers for our future meeting.
And this is something that is starting not this year, but you're looking forward to 2022. Yes. And hopefully we'll be in person then, maybe?
Yeah, hopefully we'll be in person, and there'll most likely be some sort of a limited hybrid component for those that can't participate in person. We do want to allow people to participate virtually in some aspect. We're just not 100% sure what that's going to look like yet. So these inclusion buddies for this year's meeting, so I know this is going to get confusing, but even though they're working with the 2022 program committee, we're asking them to participate in some networking sessions at this year's meeting around excellence in science and how being inclusive will really increase the excellence of the science that's being performed in your lab by having a diverse lab, by working, you know, having diverse collaborations. It really can better science. And so these inclusion buddies will be working with us for this year's meeting, in the virtual meeting, to put together some networking sessions where people can participate and really learn the value of diversity when it comes to science. And for future years, we're really hoping that these inclusion buddies can help, you know, eliminate, or I don't think we can ever eliminate implicit bias, because that's by definition, we cannot, but, you know, eliminate some of the bias that happens when you just think about your buddies and the people that you've seen speak and the people that you know, and really go outside of your networks and find those speakers that would be fabulous, you know, high level symposia speakers that maybe people are not well aware of, that maybe aren't as well known as the speakers that we typically invite to our meeting. And so we're really excited about that. And one other thing we are changing, this is not for the 2021 meeting, just because of the virtual component of that meeting, but for 2022, we're also changing our format of symposia talks. So we're going to have the two invited speakers that we typically have. And then we're also going to open up two slots for trainees. These can be graduate students, postdocs, very early career PIs. And those talks will be slightly shorter talks than the others, but one will be selected by the program committee itself, and the other will be selected by top scoring abstracts that come in. So we're really hoping that by having this balance of, you know, these mid to late career speakers with the trainees, it will create more exciting symposia. We'll get to hear more unpublished data and more unpublished research and things that are up and coming. And it can hopefully boost some of the careers of these trainees as well, getting on a large stage in front of a large audience.
Yeah, that really is a major shift from what you've had in the symposia before. It was always just, you know, who's running the symposium or symposia, and there'd be those speakers and that'd be it. So you're saying that you're going to have an additional two shorter time slots for junior researchers to contribute to those sessions. That's really exciting.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And they are longer talks than what they would give in a mini symposia session. So I think it's going to be great. You know, a lot of times we have fabulous symposia speakers, but a lot of times some of that research is either on the verge of being published or it's already been published. And a lot of the speakers that are invited as symposia speakers give talks throughout the year at lots of different conferences. So this will be just a fresh perspective and just a like some fresh research that people maybe haven't heard or are not aware of.
Is there anything else that you want to highlight about this year's meeting that is helping to improve inclusion and diversity, or anything else you want to highlight coming up?
Well, I think I've highlighted almost everything, but one thing I would love to put out there is, in our efforts to increase the diversity of our meeting, we really need the help of our members and members of our community, because most of our talks are abstract based and abstract driven. And if we don't get the submissions, then it makes it very difficult for us to, you know, broaden our diversity. And this goes down all the way. We do have a new process, if you guys are not aware of it. We've been doing it for 2 years now. For our mini symposia co-chairs. And instead of the co-chairs being selected by our program committee outright, it's an application process. So people are open, it opens in February, and people are able to apply until usually around April 30th, depending on what day of the week that falls on. And they just apply for the track that most suits them. And then those applications are reviewed by the program committee. So instead of the program committee selecting, this is a self-nominated process. And we really think, it's a great idea, because people that aren't on the, you know, the front of the minds of the program committee can throw their hat in the ring, so to speak, and be selected to organize our mini symposia session. So even down to that level, you know, making sure that we're getting diverse representation in the application process will help us, you know, better and reach our goals of, you know, inclusion and diversity at our meetings. So we really encourage you to reach out to your networks and encourage people to submit both the applications to become co-chairs, as well as, you know, the submissions for abstracts for the meeting, because without you guys, you know, there's only so much we can do, and we're doing the best that we can as staff, but we really need the help of our volunteers.
Danielle, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, we actually have two special sessions this year that support women and underrepresented minorities. The first one is WICBI, the Women in Cell Biology Committee, is having their 50th anniversary. And so they're having a session called Wonder Women in Cell Biology to support that. So that session will be filled with science from all different career levels of women. And I think people should check that out. The other session will be presented by ASCB's FRED program, which is the Faculty Research and Education Development. It's a mentoring program for grant funding success that serves senior postdocs and junior faculty at minority serving institutions and that have like a strong commitment for recruiting students from underrepresented backgrounds in science. And so that session will focus also on presenting research from individuals who have gone through this program and hopefully, you know, giving them the opportunity to, you know, put themselves out in front of the larger cell biology community, as well as attendees can learn a lot more about the program if they're interested.
Well, this sounds like really exciting new initiatives and new programs, but it does sound like it's really a two-way street, because like you said, you can initiate these things from the top, but then the membership has to come and meet you in the middle and also, you know, give you those applications, nominations, and participate as well.
Exactly.
Well, Allison Harris, Daniel Rayford, the ASCB meetings team, thank you very much for joining me today on the Pathways podcast. I appreciate the time you took.
Really appreciate you having us. This was wonderful. And if anyone has questions, they can always feel free to reach out.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mary. Happy to be here.
The Pathways podcast is a production of the American Society for Cell Biology. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later.